This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And on this week's episode, Germany's Isabel Werth will be here to talk about the motivation behind her success, having just won her third World Cup title. In our education segment, we will have part four of Helping Your Horse Perform Its Best with Coralie Hughes. But first, as always, we would like to remind you that the views of guests and the host of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. We have one item of news this week regarding the US Dressage Finals travel grant funds. And to help alleviate some of the financial burden for those traveling the greatest distances to the US Dressage Finals, the USDF is making up to $50,000 in travel grant funds available to eligible competitors. And you can find more information about this grant on the website at usdressagefinals.com. And our special guest this week is Germany's Isabel Werth, who's officially been named the most successful dressage rider ever, unquestionably the doyen of the sport. Her illustrious career spans four decades with partners such as Gigolo, Anthony FRH, Sachmo, Fabien, Verumnicht FRH, El Santo NRW, Bella Rose, Don Johnson FRH, Emilio and Viagold. Her medal tally is impressive by anyone's standards, with 10 Olympic medals, 7 World Championships, 13 European Championships, and 14 German Championships. And this season, of course, she made it a hat-trick of World Cup titles when she won the 2017 trophy in Omaha, Nebraska, with the 10-year-old mare Viagold. Isabel, welcome to the programme.
Thank you. Welcome to Germany, Chris.
It's lovely to talk to you again, and of course I had to miss the World Cup this year, but congratulations on yet another title.
Thank you.
Three World Cups now. How did that feel winning in Omaha? You've won at Las Vegas, coming back here again to a new venue with this mare that you really wanted the best performance, and you got it.
Yes, it was a great feeling, and still it is, to win in Omaha. And I have to say that Omaha was really a perfect show. It was a perfect venue. And as soon we arrived there, we had fantastic facilities there. The stables, the ground, the floor, the public, really the crowd, the atmosphere. It was super organized. So the horses came over with the plane in a super shape. It was really, really perfect organized, and there was nothing to shout. And all riders were really happy about this show. And so that was perfect. And with this perfect facilities, it was great to start. And I was very, very happy that Vaya was so focused, and she was a bit scared in the first competition in the Grand Prix, but in the freestyle we really could take the risk what we wanted to take, and it was a perfect show. I'm really glad and happy and proud of her.
Because you had such a fantastic qualifying season, didn't you, through the World Cup. You obviously had got her on the very best form coming into that World Cup. Do you think that was the best score that you can get, or do you think there's more to come from this mare?
You know, to come from 90%, I don't want to stay with both feet on the ground. Not to say there's more and more possible. I'm really happy that we could get 90% three times already. And I think there's a bit here, a bit there, but I'm just happy to have this horse on this great level. And she improved a lot since Rio. She improved so great from last year to Rio. I started more or less 1 year ago with her to be really concentrated and focused on her. And the development after 8 months to Rio was really amazing. And then there was a big step after Rio, because she was not really experienced. She was green in the Grand Prix spot, and you could see that the whole body, that the whole muscles improved from Rio to the indoor season. And we could get it in the competition and could show that she improved. And and now there's still a bit more, but I'm happy if we can keep it like it is.
You do have a little bit of news about her, though, Isabel, you have to share with us.
Yeah, she came back in a super shape. She was really fit. I'm happy. The trip over was great, and the trip back was super easy. And now she has a really relaxing time, and we try to get an embryo. Christina, the owner, she's really, really fit in breeding and experienced in embryo transfers, and already she had some embryos and babies and nice children. But now we are looking forward to get one more this season, and so she has really a nice time now. I ride her just a bit to keep her a little bit fit and easy. And the rest, she's in the field or in the paddock, and we look forward to get an embryo, and hopefully it will work in the next 2-3 weeks.
I'm sure that will be an exciting time for you, and you know, always nice to have a foal from one of your horses too, so something to look forward to with her. But I want to focus, Isabel, on the length of your illustrious career. I mean, the longevity. You've been at the top of the sport now for over 30 years. You're now number one again. And really, the German trio there is pretty dominant on the FEI rankings right now. 1, 2, 3. You must like the look of that.
Yeah, we are really proud to be as strong as we are at the moment. So it's a really great situation we have in Germany. But we all know that the best rider is nothing without a top horse. And at the moment, I'm in a really comfortable situation with three top Grand Prix horses, three horses under the top, 12 or 15 of the world. That makes me really happy and proud, because all three horses next to Vaya with Emilio and Don Johnson, they are really different. And they had all of them, they had a completely different history, and it makes me really happy and proud that they are in such a great form and shape at the moment. And of course, that the Germans are back on the top, it makes us really proud. But we all know how quick it can change, and one little injury, you are back on down to earth and back on the ground, and a little accident, whatever can happen, and your dreams they fly away. So I think it's really important to stay on the ground, and to stay realistic with horses, and I really try to enjoy the time at the moment, and to hope that it stays for a while.
Let's just remind everybody, Isabel, it was 1992 when you won your first World Cup, and some 25 years ago in Gothenburg with Fabian. And then 10 years ago, you won it in Las Vegas with Varumnicht. That's added to 10 Olympic medals, 7 World Championship titles, 13 European medals, and 14 German Championship titles. So you're officially now the world's most successful dressage rider. How do you feel about that reputation? Do you feel any pressure of the expectations that are on you because of your successes over such a long time?
I think now there comes a time where I can really go without a lot of pressure, because I have got thanks, a lot of medals, and a lot of success, and I just enjoy. I enjoy to compete. I really love to compete still. And I love to compete against the best. And but also I really enjoy to be in the stable, to find a new horse, a young one, and get a vision how it could look and how it could improve after 4 or 5 years. It's always a long term to improve and to develop a young horse. But this is my passion, and this is why I'm in the sport for such a long time. Because the success and the medal is the topping on the top. But the way to go there, this is what I love to do. And at the moment, I have a really great time and I can I can get a bit get the payment for this, or how you can say, but this is really just the end. The daily work is what I really love to do, and I hope I can do it for a long time. And of course, there will come a time where I will not compete anymore, not so often. But at the moment, I really enjoy it and keep on going.
Do you have a special room for all your medals, your trophies? I mean, there must be so many.
I have some special corners where maybe you can't believe, but it's nice to see, it's nice to have, of course, but you know, after Oman, no, it's over already, and the next show is the most important one, and the future is important, and now the Oman has done, and it means I look forward for the next, and I do not sit in front of the medals and pray myself. It's this is past, and the future has to be modulated. This is what I really want to do, and not to look always back for old successes.
They will always be there when you're very old in your armchair and waiting for you, Isabel.
Yeah, as a old grandma, and I can look the medals. Yeah, this is a good idea.
Exactly. Well, let's just recap. You know, when you talk about finding the next young horse and producing that horse, that is the satisfaction, as anybody who works and trains with horses understands. And when you look back at those horses, let's just quickly, I mean, Gigolo, Anthony FRH, Sachmo, Fabian, Varumnik, Del Santo, and you mentioned Bella Rosa, Don Johnson, Emilio, and Viagold, now your current horses. That is amazing to find so many fantastic horses, but you've had wonderful people behind you. Of course, Dr. Schulten Balmer and now Madeline Winter Schultz have been really key to your professional development as a rider, as a sportswoman, as an athlete, but also as a businesswoman, and helping you find those horses. Talk a little bit about those first principles of finding a young horse, Isabel. What are they for you?
I'm glad that you said these names. And Dr. Schumbauma was really the first person in my life where I was really lucky to meet this man in the right at the right time and the right situation, because he's really the one. He's responsible that I'm in the sport, that I'm able to improve and develop a horse and into the Grand Prix sport. That I know how to build up a young one to a Grand Prix horse. And then I had a second lucky situation when I met Madeleine, and to get her as a friend, as a part of my family, not only as my owner, as a mecène. She is always behind me, whatever happens. When I call her and say, Madeleine, I've seen a great horse, then she's, okay, let us buy him. As long as a fair price and everything, she's always supporting me, not only as a rider, as a person, as a human. This is a very, very comfortable and luxury situation. I know this. This is privileged. And of course, to have owners like Christina and her husband, Hans Krogman, as the owners of Viagold, that they say, okay, we are happy to keep her in the sport. We don't want to sell her. They trust me. They give me the confidence to keep the horse and to bring it in the sport. This is a very, very great situation. I know this. A lot of other riders are in a really, really worse situation. But what I always try is to pay for this confidence, not with money, of course, to pay with my confidence, with the truth, and with honest training and work. And I think this fair partnership is the result of very happy relationship between this team, the owners, Madeleine, the mecène, and of course my team at home here. no one sees when I'm in Omaha with one horse, that here 15 other people are behind me and keep the stable running and keep all the other horses in shape, and that they work without looking after the time, and that they feel responsible for the horses and for the stables and for the whole company here. And that makes me really happy, and I know that it's a very special and comfortable situation.
Yeah, it really is. You've now established it so well, of course. It's run like clockwork, and you have that fantastic team behind you. So let's have a little snapshot of how many horses you have. You said you have 15 people. How many horses do you have in your stable at the moment? Tell us a little bit about, you know, the business as it is right now, Isabel.
We have round about 50 horses under the saddle, from a young one to the Grand Prix horses. We have from the foal to the retired horses. For example, I'm really happy to have Satchmo here. You know, Satchmo is one of the most successful horses. He is here happy with 23 years. He's in the field with his pony, and it makes me as happy as a successful Grand Prix horse to see that a horse where I'm so thankful for, who was so great for me and during my career, gave me and he gives me so much. It was a nice time after his active time. And all about, we have more than 100 horses here.
And typically in a day then, Isabel, how many horses would you ride?
A typical day, it's 8. Sometimes it's one or two more when another one is in holidays, or I have some for another one for student to teach, whatever. But the normal day means 8 horses to ride.
And when you look at those horses, as you said, Satchmo is one that produced such amazing career for you, and all of the others that we named. Is it hard to look back and say, okay, which were those highlights, if you will, when you've done so much, you've traveled so much, you've had so many titles to your name and medals now, and I'm sure they were all individually special at the time, but when you look back over the years now, are there any that you can highlight and say, yes, that was special because?
There was one special was, of course, the first individual victory with Gigolo and Donna Esching, the first European title. Of course, Atlanta, the first gold medal, the first individual gold medal at the Olympic Games. And for sure, the World Equestrian Games 2006 for Satchmo. That was so special with this horse after 1.5 years with big problems, with a lot of trouble, with a lot of tears, to come back in front of 45,000 people at home in Aachen. That was so great. Can't tell you, that was the best atmosphere ever I had, because it was so special with this horse to come back. So that was really a special thing. But of course, to come back with Vaya in Rio and then Omaha, the first individual title after a long time, that makes me really, really happy. And there are so many special situations and victories, so I'm very thankful to have some of them, and hopefully another one more in the future.
Yes, Aachen, of course, was a very, very special moment. It was just amazing, the atmosphere there when you won. You must have been crying at the party that evening.
Not only at the party. I was on the horse really crying already, because it was such a special feeling. Yeah.
You're known for your determination, your absolute focus, your perfectionism. But I remember you telling me once that the only music you had on your iPod was your freestyle music. Has that changed? Do you allow yourself to listen to other music now, or are you still that person?
No, when I'm in front of my freestyle, or in preparation of my freestyle in a competition or on the show, there's only my freestyle music on my iPod and where I'm focused on. But in between, of course, I hear different kind of music. That depends on my situation, or my how do you say, Stimmung?
Your mood.
Yeah, my mood, right? It's really everything you can imagine. When my son is in the car, we sing songs for the kids and through the whole depends on the situation.
Of course, Frederick is now 7. So, of course, what is he on a pony? Is he interested?
Sometimes yes, it depends and the same on his mood. But it's not a rider already that you can say he's really, really interested and focused on riding. He likes to be in the stable. He likes to feed. He likes animals, whatever. And he's riding a bit, but not every day. And we will see. I do not expect that he becomes a rider. I just hope that he will find something where he's really patient with, where he's really what he's really enjoying, and this is really what I wish for him and for us, that he finds something where he's really happy with.
Let's talk about the season to come, the European Championships this August in Gothenburg. So leading up to that, that would be, as you say, the focus now. Next competitions leading up to that. Talk a little bit about what your summer looks like now and leading up to the European Championships, Isabel.
So next week I will go to Hagen, Horses and Dreams, and it will be the first start in the outdoor season, the first outdoor show. So I think it's quite exciting to see how the horses will behave the first outdoor show. So Emilio is in a really good shape, so I hope we can bring it in the competition. Then I will take a very young one, Quintus. He's really inexperienced, and he will go the first Young Horses Grand Prix Tour, the Louis d'Or prize. And then we keep on going. We will go to Mannheim, to Munich, Wiesbaden, and then we have the German Championship. It's the first qualification. And from there, we will go to Aachen. And then after Aachen, of course, we have the focus to hopefully qualify then to Gothenburg. And yeah, Gothenburg, I'm really, really excited to go there, because I'm sure it will become a very enthusiastic and emotional European Championships. Because in Sweden, the equestrian sport is number two there. There are a lot of people really enthusiastic for horses and for the equestrian sport. So it's a very interesting concept they have. So it's I just know the indoor arena there. But now they have the whole city. I think the whole city is a bit involved in the Europeans. So this is a new concept, I know, and I think it becomes really, really nice. And I hope it becomes really nice, but I'm quite sure it will. And so it becomes a highlight in the season.
And I'm curious now, Isabel, because you have won so much. Do you have any ambitions? Is it about winning more medals now, more titles, or is it about continuing to produce those first-class horses, the very top Grand Prix horses, and watching your students be successful with them too at this point in your career? What is most important to you now? What's left to be done?
The most important thing is to improve the horses and to develop young horses and to develop my team, to improve the riders, to come in the top spot, and to improve the horses. 10 years ago, I was not counting my medals, and it's the same now. I'm glad that I have a few, that I can say I'm not missing one, and it's not necessary to go there or there to win one more medal. This is the result, but it's not my motivation. My motivation is to perform as good as possible and to perform the horse as good as possible. I try to celebrate the horse, and if I can celebrate a horse, this is more than a medal.
And you probably don't use the word retire, do you?
So many people ask me, well, it's time to stop now. And I do not think about it, because I think the time will come and the time will show me, and the horses will show me, and hopefully there's a rider on my team that will show me that it's time to to retire, and that it's time to go two steps backwards. And there's no deadline, and I hope that I find the right time, how I found the right time for the horses to retire, and I hope I will find the right time for myself to retire.
And so I'm sure, you know, that there is plenty more horses that you will find along the way. But in terms of your own fitness at your age, and we won't mention your age, but you are north of 40 now. In terms of your own personal fitness, Isabel, do you just ride horses or do you do something else to help you now as you get older?
At the moment, I have just my horses and my son. He really keeps me fit because he's always busy and running through his life. But to be honest, I think about to start with a bit more fitness because it's not a secret that we are getting older and that it could be quite helpful to work for my own fitness. My grandma became 102. And she really was in a fitness group till I think 90 or 95. So, and she's really idol for me, and because of her discipline and of the way she became old, and I would like to follow her in that way.
That's a fantastic inspiration. It obviously is in the family genes, Isabel. So you don't have any physical issues that are stopping you in any way or slowing you down, obviously.
No, God thanks not, we keep our fingers crossed. Touch wood.
There you go. We'll definitely do, and please don't stop. There's so much more to come from Isabel Verth, and we are enjoying every minute of it, Isabel. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the program. Congratulations again on everything that you've done, and the very best of luck for this season.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you.
And we will see you in Tryon for the World Equestrian Games in 2018.
I hope so, yes. I work for it.
Well, thank you so much, Isabel. It's been wonderful to catch up with you.
Thank you, Chris.
And this interview is courtesy of Wisp Sports and may not be reproduced in any form without permission. The original broadcast can be found at wispsports.com. And finally, in our education segment, we have the final part of the series Helping Your Horse Perform Its Best, which was recorded at the 2016 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. In this segment, certified practitioner of the Masterson Method of Performance Equine Bodywork, Coralie Hughes, talks about how and why horses get sore.
Okay, so there are all kinds of issues with a horse's body, just because none of us are perfect, that can result in unnatural, excessive negative tension. An old injury that's now healed, medically healed, very often. I worked on a horse that was his last ditch before euthanasia, because this horse had gotten caught in a fence, and he lay there all night jerking, couldn't get loose. When they found him the next day, they said that shoot me now was in his eyes, and his leg was hamburger, and they got him healed. You know, the vet healed up all the cuts and everything, but the horse was lame. Put him out on pasture rest. Year later, the horse is lame. Problem is, the psychology of the horse is to guard whatever is painful and to not let it go. Because if you think about being the ultimate prey animal, if they show a weakness or if that something hurts, they're going to get kicked out of the herd, and then they're coyote food. And so by the time we see a lameness, something has been going on in that body actually a very long time, because the horse just can't hide it any longer. So an old injury. So on this horse that I was telling you about, they couldn't get him not lame. And this isn't because I'm amazing. It's because some kinds of body work can do amazing things. And I worked on that horse. He was very defensive and kind of dangerous to work on. But after about four trips working on him, and so that I could finally, he would allow me to get to his groin muscles, he had knots 4 years later, the size of my fist in the groin of the leg that was in the fence. They can't let it go and without help. And that's what the body work is all about, is helping them do what they don't know how to do for themselves, because that's not the way they're wired for survival. Compensation patterns for discomfort that hasn't yet manifested as an injury. Like a lot of horses will start lifting a shoulder when that foot starts hurting because they're sucking off that foot, and they'll get sore on that same side. call those hoof points, because when they're sucking off a hoof, but they're not yet lame, but the muscles are starting to hurt from the work. Sore feet, already said that. Natural differences in leg strength. Horses by nature carry more with the right hind and push more with the left hind. In dressage, it's our goal to get the back end even, which means both hind legs have to carry evenly and both hind legs have to push evenly. But they don't start out that way. They start out wired differently, which works fine for a horse in the wild. Dental issues, conformational issues, muscle memory, like we were talking about that one horse of an injury that they had, they have to learn it doesn't hurt anymore. Poor fitting tack, we could talk forever about that. Starting a new level, a horse has to learn a whole new coordination. They have to develop new muscles, and those muscles are going to get tight. And so are starting a difficult new exercise. And one thing that I would love to say is incredible horses are being developed today or being bred today. Just because a horse can do something doesn't mean they should, that they're physically and mentally yet able to do it. And yet people take that, what that horse offers, because they're so talented and built so magnificently, and you have the three-year-olds that are riding like they're in fourth level, but they're doing training level work, but they're not built yet to do it. And that wreaks havoc on the body. But there are a lot of typical rider imbalances, and this gets fun to think about. I mean, it's kind of tragic because I fight this all the time, because us being unbalanced creates excessive negative tension. You can't go smoothly if you have an uneven weight on top of you. It upsets the rhythm. So unbalanced weight has a huge impact on the horse. To a horse, their balance is everything. Balance and the ability to move their legs means they'll survive the next predator's attack. And the horse is just trying to find their way and survive. So all the horse wants from us, all they want, is for us to be straight and horizontal and balanced over our feet in the stirrups. That's all they want. Why is it so hard? Because I tilt my head, and 11 pounds is saying go this way, right? Or I look down, and so then 11 pounds is saying go this way. Or I sit too hard on my right seat bone, and my left leg is weaker, and so my right leg is clamped on, keeping me on the horse, and my left leg is just kind of there. You know, and so the horse likes my left leg a whole lot better, right? But then our aids aren't even in our conversation with the horse. So if we can't talk to them and ride them evenly, they're carrying an unbalanced burden. And that always ends up in the muscles. Anybody ever been afraid on a horse? So whenever you're, you know, because of fear or tension before a show or whatever, what do? We get tense, and when we get tense, we tighten our back, which goes straight into the horse's back, because we can't anymore get our pelvis out of the way, and the whole idea of a sitting trot is just to get out of the way of the back. Remember we talked about the back and the suspension? It's just to get us out of the way so the horse can, but all of a sudden you've tightened up your back, you can't, and the horse can't come up. And if you have a horse like mine, his first thing to do is get mad. They, you know, get mad or get frustrated, or they learn to just suck it up and keep going and do the best that they can do. But when we get that tension, and then what happens when your legs clamp up because you're afraid, you're tense, or whatever? And this is really important, because if you are really soft and loose around the horse and you artfully use your heels on these abdominal muscles, because they connect, you can make the horse lick and chew. But what happens when we're tense and we're pounding away? You're tightening up the jaw and you're tightening up the pole. Because the whole thing works together, the whole mechanism of the horse. Oh, another thing that's really important is our hands. What happens to our arms when we get tired? We clamp here, and if we don't have elastic elbows, all this stuff they tell us to do in the books, and it's all really practical. Because if we're tight and we can't elastically follow and be in sync with the horse like the horse wants us to be, what do we have? The weight of your hands on the reins is multiplied by 10 on the pole. You add a shank bit to that and multiply it by 4 once again. And so huge pressure that we're putting on the pole without even realizing it. And it can be nothing more than I got really scared and I really closed my hands and I really locked my elbows and I stopped going with the horse in the trot or the canter or whatever. Oh, and then riding the bend. riding the bend is really fun, because what did we all grow up riding? Bicycles or motorcycles? How do you go around a bend in a bicycle or a motorcycle? You lean. And when you lean on a horse going around a bend, the horse has to straighten underneath you, or they can't stand up. And the horse has to scramble, and so then you're pulling on the inside rein and kicking with the inside leg to try to get the bend back, when all you had to do was just sit up and ride around rather than your inside shoulder going down. Circles are really interesting, once again, because of the heaviness of one side of our body. Whether you're a right-handed or a left-handed person, it's going to be the left side. You're a left-handed person, right-handed for a right-handed person. Because if you're doing a circle to the left, centrifugal force, and I'd be interested if some of you have felt this. I've felt it a lot. Centrifugal force, when you're going to the left, because the right side is heavier, wants to suck you off the horse. Have you ever felt like you're falling off the horse going to the left on a circle? That's why. It's centrifugal force working on the heavier side of your body. Going to the right, centripetal force, which sucks you into the circle, works on the heavier side of your body. And so you have a totally different job riding that circle going to the left versus going to the right, whether you're trying to battle centrifugal or centripetal force on your body. And just think about it, because we take all of that stuff, all of the stuff that's in our bodies, we take to our horses and we put it in their bodies. I can only speak, well, I've had everything under the sun done to my own horses before I learned the Masterson method. And since then, I just do the Masterson method. And the Masterson method is the only form of body work in which I'm trained. So I can't really speak to the others. Other than that, I think this is more powerful and lasts longer. But what it does is, speaking for the Masterson method, is that there are two main big goals. One is to, and this is what makes it unique compared to other modalities, it releases tension at the site of the tension, but it also, the techniques that we use, restore range of motion to the joints. Because what happens when you get this unnatural tension and the muscles can't relax and can't contract fully anymore, the joint gets frozen. Well, when the joint can't operate fully anymore, when you lose full range of motion of the joint, obviously you lose stride length, you lose the back, you lose all of that. But another thing that's really important that you lose is that you lose the body's natural hyaluronic acid pump. I didn't realize they had one. But inside the joints, there are cells that are specialized that produce hyaluronic acid for the protection of the joint. But they only work when there is full range of motion of the joint, because they have to suck out the old gunk and put in new stuff. And that's why they call it the pump. But when you don't have range of motion, that stops working. And so you lose that natural protection. Natural protection is as well for the joint.
Our thanks again to Coralie Hughes for this series, and you can listen to previous parts of this series on the last four episodes of the USDF's official podcast. And finally, a reminder to judges, L judges, and those attending the L Education Program to make sure to renew your yearly access to the L Program website. The website has been revised for easier navigation, and there's now a new biomechanics module that contains 6 educational videos. If you have any questions about the L Education Program or the L Program website, please email lprogram@usdf.org. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget you can download this podcast from the iTunes Podcast Store to any podcast app, so you can listen to the show on the go. And to find out when the next episode is posted, be sure to follow us on social media on Facebook and Twitter. And don't forget, there are regular updates on education and resources on eTrack. That's on the website at usdf.org. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.